Flugshow, der Skispringen-Podcast. Alle News zum Skispringen der Männer und Frauen, spannende Hintergrundstories und exklusive Interviews. Präsentiert euch das deutsch-österreichische Trio Tobias Ruf, Louis Holuch und Gernot Clement.
Die Flugshow hat angekündigt, dass sie eine Pause macht. Sie konnte ihr Versprechen nicht halten. Nur wenige Tage nach unserem Rückblick auf die Saison bei den Herren und davor hatten wir ja schon die Saison der Damen Revue passieren lassen, melden wir uns heute schon zurück und Louis Holuch ist bei mir von skispringen.com und Louis, es hat einen sehr, sehr, sehr guten Grund, warum wir uns so früh schon aus unserer vermeintlichen Pause, die wir eigentlich machen wollten, zurückmelden, denn heute wird's hochkarätig, was unseren Gast angeht.
Ja, das kann man wohl sagen. Damit auch Hallo von mir und erstmal sorry für die Fake News, die wir letzte Woche verbreitet haben. Das wussten wir allerdings zu dem Zeitpunkt nicht besser, weil die Ereignisse sich förmlich überschlagen haben. Ja, also wir kamen ja selber gar nicht mit, freuen uns aber umso mehr, dass wir euch jetzt tatsächlich einen waschechten Stargast hier präsentieren dürfen. Denn bei uns in der Flugshow in wenigen Sekunden, werdet ihr es dann hören, ist niemand geringerer als Halvor Egner Granerud zu Gast, unser Gesamtweltcup-Sieger des abgelaufenen Winters. Und das ist nicht die einzige Besonderheit, denn zum ersten Mal präsentieren wir euch auch eine Folge auf Englisch wohlgemerkt, denn der Halvor hat zwar gesagt, ja, er spricht ein bisschen Deutsch, aber dann haben wir ihm gesagt, wir kommen ihm entgegen und machen das Ganze auf Englisch. Wir hoffen natürlich dennoch, dass euch diese Folge gefallen wird. Und ich glaube, an der Stelle müssen wir aber einen nochmal ganz besonders hervorheben, bei dem wir uns auch bedanken wollen, Tobi.
Absolut. Und zwar ist es der Vater von Halvor, der Svein Granerud, mit dem wir schon länger in Kontakt stehen. Halvor hat es nochmal bestätigt. Er ist Fan unseres Podcasts und wir haben es auch immer regelmäßig mitbekommen. Er sendet uns immer Feedback und hat auch schon sehr spannende und lustige Anekdoten zu seinem Sohn gesendet. Und ja, wir haben den Svein dann kontaktiert, ob wir mit Halvor mal sprechen könnten. Und wie es der Zufall so wollte, saßen die beiden in dem Moment nebeneinander und haben sich die Champions League Bayern gegen Paris angeschaut. Und da ging das auf sehr kurzem Dienstweg. Also, lieber Svein, du wirst bestimmt dir auch diese Folge nicht entgehen lassen. Vielen lieben Dank für das schnelle Einfädeln des Interviews und auch für alles. Ist immer sehr, sehr angenehm und schön, mit dir und jetzt auch mit deinem Sohn übers Skispringen zu plaudern. Und ja, Louis, wir zeichnen das, was wir jetzt besprechen, ja nach dem Gespräch mit Halvor auf und ich war wirklich beeindruckt, war sehr, sehr lehrreich, super cool mit ihm auch mal zu sprechen, denn obwohl er so super erfolgreich war, war er in den deutschen Medien eigentlich relativ wenig präsent und wir haben einen echt bemerkenswerten jungen Mann, einen bemerkenswerten Sportler kennenlernen dürfen, der sehr interessante Perspektiven auch auf die Dinge, die rund ums Skispringen passieren hat. Wir reden über die abgelaufene Saison, wie er es geschafft hat, im Endeffekt von Platz 61 im Gesamtweltcup ganz nach vorne zu springen und er hat uns mitgenommen in all die Emotionen, all die Highlights, die wir hier auch im Podcast begleitet haben, ob es die Skiflug-WM, die Vierschanzentournee, dann die WM in Oberstdorf, wo er dann rausgenommen wurde, weil er an Corona erkrankte, dann hinten raus, ihr erinnert euch alle an den schweren Sturz von Daniel André Tande, einer der besten Freunde von Halvor Egner Granerud. Er hat super interessante Perspektiven auch auf das Thema Damenskispringen, das uns sehr am Herzen liegt, uns hier mitgeteilt. Und ja, ein rundum interessantes, sehr sympathisches Gespräch, das wir führen durften. Und dann, Louis, würde ich sagen, wir spannen die Hörerinnen und Hörer nicht länger auf die Folter und wir wünschen euch viel Spaß mit unserem Interview mit Halvor Egner Granerud. How to start the postseason of a podcast? Start with the best one. And we have him here. We are very glad that he's our guest today in the Flugshow. A very warm welcome to Norway to you. Hi, Halvor Egner Granerud.
Hello.
Halvor, nice to have you here in the show. And Halvor, let's talk about the World Cup season 2020-21. It has been a special season for everybody, but I think for you, even more a really special season. So 3 weeks ago, almost, the World Cup season ended in Planica. Now you had time to go home to get a rest. And Halvor, did you already realize what you have achieved in the last few months? What an incredible season.
I think I have been in some ways, but in like properly... let it sink in. I think it will be hard until I'm a lot older, I think. At least the older ski jumpers I've talked to have said, that you won't realize what you've done until you're maybe 50. So in that sense I haven't, but in the at least emotional state at the moment, I think I've quite like settled with what has been and starting to look forward to next year.
Okay. How was it during the season? There are a lot of sportsmen, Halvor, that say that they are so focused on the events that are going on that they haven't the big picture in their mind. Was it with you the same? Because you started quite well and things went on and there were one event after the other. Did you already start realizing things during the season, or was it the other way that you were really focused?
A bit of both, I think. In the season I had was more or less the first, like, it was the first season where a male ski jumper had over 10 victories from Norway. So the Norwegian media was they wasn't letting me not know what I was doing. It was quite, I think, already in Engelberg they were starting to make, at least in my eyes, a bit silly comparisons to some of the greatest ski jumpers we have, and starting to talk about records. And so I had this record, or more or less all the press conferences we did throughout the winter was about which record could be broken. So in that sense, I was quite aware of what I was doing, but my focus was on having one day for competitions and then start the next day and put the last one behind and just go on and do my things.
And the things, you did them quite well. Alvo, we are living in special times with the pandemic. Had there been any celebrations for the great success you've achieved from the Norwegian Ski Association, or how were the celebrations going on? I think differently than you deserved it and then you wanted it.
Yeah, it's been very little. We had a nice evening in Planica, but also there you, what can I say, Tando was a bit of a party pooper as well. It hasn't been easy to like enjoy and celebrate when one of your best mates is in the hospital. So that was a bit, it's put a bit down on the celebrations. And when I come home, I haven't done anything really. It's been quite quiet. I think from all my seasons, it's only last year that has been more or less partying and celebrating after a season. So it's been very little.
That's actually the keyword, because obviously when we talk about your season, we have to go back 1 year and see where you actually came from rank number 61 in the overall World Cup to rank number one in just a year. Is pretty much incredible. So of course people would really like to know what's happened during the summer, which made you becoming the best ski jumper in the world. How did that all go?
A lot of training and a clear idea. But I think also the year before was a bit, well, it was a lot of things that went wrong. Sometimes it's like that in ski jumping, and you go down a rabbit hole and you can't get your head out. So the season before that, I was 15. So it's not like I haven't done good jumps before, but obviously it was everything that could go wrong last year went wrong. Even in the first competition I was in Rosno, I was like 24 after the first round and then did 31, I think. So it was a lot of things that went against that year. And then, yeah, I tried to look at everything and see, look at everything I do as a professional, and tried to change the things that could be changed, and go in with a clear plan, and yes, stick to my plan and do it in my own pace. So the jumping throughout the summer was really bad. I was not a good ski jumper until starting to get better in September, and then October it was starting to get really good. Then in November I couldn't believe how good it was. So, but it went step by step throughout the summer. But it started on a really low level, the first jump of the summer I almost flipped. So it was strange summer, but it was also quite fun because it was so focused and so patient, and
was the pandemic in that time probably even a help, because there were literally no competitions outside of Norway for you?
I think it's maybe a case of like forced learning as well. Usually we have camps abroad, but last year we had to do everything in Norway, and of course we were like a bit concerned. We only jump in the hills in Lillehammer, and because in Trondheim it was closed as well because the hill had fallen out a bit, so it wasn't opened until late autumn. So we had to jump a lot in Lillehammer and only that. So we were a bit concerned, but it turned out good. And some of us competed in Bisla in the summer Grand Prix. But for me, I had to have 10 days out of training afterwards. So for me, it felt too big of a sacrifice. But I think it was good in the way that we got, it was quite calm, but at the same time, it's good to have something to look forward to. And I think for me in my situation, it was good, but for the ones jumping quite good, it's a long summer if you jump good from the start and you don't have competitions until November. So I think it was good for me, but maybe not so much for them.
Understandable. Was there something which you changed, which was the biggest one? Was it just in your daily training routine, or was it in your mental mindset, or probably even equipment?
Of course, it's a lot of things you change and adjust. What I felt in the winter was that I set myself a really high goal, which I worked for the whole summer, and that was to win the World Cup overall. I set that as my goal in April last year. So that helped when we came into winter, in like the mentality thing. So it was like winning your first World Cup and then enjoying that for the evening and then think forwards. So that was good. And then in the technique and equipment and everything, we had some small changes, and that also made me change my equipment up a bit, and I think it worked. And also in the technique, it was some on the kind of the takeoff and takeoff motion, it's quite the same, but the way I get there is a bit different and more consistent. So but from the season before, I had to change a lot because there was so many I had so many bugs in my system that I had to kind of start all over again, because everything I did was more or less wrong. So I had to really go down to basic and just practice letting go of the gate. It was that bad in the beginning, so I had to gradually go down the in run and then take off. So
how important then, Halvor, you said you changed a lot of things and you had this big goal that you set yourself. How important was the start of the season as you saw, oh, the things start working?
Yeah, it was really good. It's maybe a bit strange, but I was a bit disappointed in Wisla coming fourth, because I've jumped a lot in Midtstad, the K95 here in Oslo. And on the last camp before we went to Wisla, I jumped with 2 kilometers per hour lower speed than what I've previously done when I've been like in really good shape. So honestly, I thought I was better than fourth. And it's quite strange. I came into the season with like immense amount of confidence. And that season starter actually confirmed it as well. It was good, and it brought like a calmness to me as well, that okay, my normal jumping is good enough to be on the podium or even win competitions. So then it was a lot easier to also just keep on working with the same things, because I didn't have to change anything like major. It was just small adjustments to each hill. So it was of course important, but I think my confidence was high enough to at least Wisla could have been bad and I would still have a good season. But That's how it always is. You kind of, it's so important in ski jumping to have a good start and be in shape when it starts, because then you get into that. You have so few jumps, you have no time to like make major changes, so you just have to tweak and tweak, and it's a lot harder to adjust your in-run position in a competition than in a training without the bib on. So it's important to be ready when it starts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you said the other example the year before, it started to not to work from the first moment on, and so it went the whole season. Halvor, then was the first big highlights. We had lots of them in this season. Was quite awesome for us journalists and for all the ski jumping fans with the highlights we had. And the first highlight we had, it was middle of December, was the Ski Flying World Championships in Planica. And I think one of the protagonists of this Ski Flying World Championships were definitely you, Halvor. And yeah, it were amazing competition that we all saw. And let's talk about the individual competition first. And I still get a bit goosebumps when I think of the competition. Of course, as a German, we were sitting here and watching the battle of you, Markus, and Karl. And after four rounds of ski flying, 0.5 points behind, we saw the pictures. You were really disappointed. What was going on in your mind when you saw that Karl had won the gold medal 0.5, which is ridiculous points in front of you?
I don't remember exactly, but I think I was quite angry that I didn't make a better attempt at putting down a telemark on that last jump. Probably, and also the first round. The first round jump in the competition there wasn't good enough. I was quite angry with it. I was quite surprised when I was fourth after the first round, because I think my top level that weekend was extremely high, but that first jump wasn't. I was a bit late on the takeoff and got a lot of skis, and it was really irritating. I think I was almost 20 points behind already after the first round. So yeah, that was the biggest disappointment for me, the first jump. And then the rest were good jumps. And also that final round jump was, at the time, I think my best jump ever. So I was disappointed, but also I had absolutely no problem with Geiger winning, because he's a good guy, first of all, and then I think he's shown his talents like proper this winter in ski flying, in especially in Planica, but previous years as well, he's been really good there. I think, of course, his jumping style doesn't exactly like screams ski flying world champion and World Cup ski flying overall winner. But when he's jumping his best jumps, it's really good. And then half a point, it's like, what can you do? It is what it is, and of course it was a disappointment at the time, but also I got my revenge, and that was good.
And let's talk about the revenge. It was just one day later, we had the team competition, and Halvor, it was the gold medal for Norway, and it was also you that was, of course, a big part in this team. After the big disappointment you said in the individual competition, I mean, we are still talking about a silver medal. So in the end, it's a big success. Yeah, but at the point, we all saw it, and you said it was a disappointment. But one day later, we had the team competition, and I was sitting here and said, looks good. Maybe Germany can win the gold medal. But then there was always this Mr. Granerud from Norway that said, no, Tobias, you had your gold medal in individual, not in the team competition. How did you do it? I mean, it's did you switch off the things that happened in individual, or did you say, okay, it was 0.5 points missing, I want this gold medal? How was this from the mental from the mental thing you did, what was going on in your mind?
I think I came into the whole weekend with not too much experience of jumping good in ski flying. I've jumped quite a lot of ski flying, but not like on this super high level. So I was learning every day. And then in the team competition, it was quite open before the competition started who was actually the best team. And then for me personally, I was really focused and had a really good feeling in the body the whole day. I was really like feeling the groove, feeling the rhythm. And then in that final round, when I like saw the list on the top, and it was like, I think it was 14 points behind the world champion. It was, I was really motivated to like give it my best, and I really hoped that Alex would do something drastic on the gates, because if you jump good enough in Planica, you can get quite a lot of bonus in that regard, because I don't know how. I think it's because of how the hill is. You for jumps on the absolute top level, you are actually able to jump quite long with a lot reduced speed. So I was waiting for after Kubaki to just hear the gate going down. And then I saw it was two gates down, and I was like, oh, yeah, oh, yes, we are going for this. And then I did this amazing jump. I think, looking back at it, it's definitely one of the best jumps I've done. And also with a really good landing and high style marks, I was so happy. And you can see it and also hear it a bit when I meet the others in the team. I say like, now he will have to try. And I was quite loud and quite happy, but it was such an amazing feeling, because I felt like this is the best jump I've done this weekend at the most important time. And then nobody, or we didn't know if the jury or it was a coach decision to take Geiger down afterwards. We had no idea. So we had to look at, and I don't think it shown on screen either, that it was a coach decision. So it was really hard to know, and we just had to go by the green line. And then suddenly it was just like two on Germany, and we had to like 1 second and to just think. And then it was all the emotions, and definitely for me the highlight of the season. It was amazing.
Yeah, well deserved as well. That's an interesting point we also want to talk about with you, is the thing with the coach's decision. Is it only the coach that takes the decision, or did you talk or do you talk with Alex? Because coaches' decisions we saw a lot of times in this season, and also with you. Did you talk to Alex before the competition that coach's decision could be an option? Do you have contact before with him? Or is it only the coach that has to take or that takes the decision in that moment?
It varies. For example, in Planets, I don't think we talked too much about it. I think I or we discussed it a bit in the fact that you get more, you have to, if you jump 245 in Planitza contra 235, for example, you have to jump a lot more out of the hill. And for each meter you go down, it's starting to get flatter. So if you jump that good, you do get more points if you go down the gate. So we discussed it a bit there. And then in Bischofshofen, I was quite clear that I want to go down the gate and see what happens, because that's the only way we can get a good result. And it didn't work because my jumping wasn't good enough and Kamil was jumping amazing, but that was the only option. And there I think it was my decision really to go down. I was quite clear that as long as there's not like a big change in conditions, I want to go down. And then Klingenthal was all Alex. I had nothing to do with that. And I think that was the times I went down on the gate. But mostly it's Alex and the coaches team. But we do have a say. And also in some of the competitions, you have to take care of your body as well, because it's not necessarily good for the body to jump like way over the hill size all the time. So you have to try and find that right balance and hopefully land more or less on hill size, because that's a lot better than like 3 or 4 meters over. Then you start to get some issues.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it in Lahti that sometimes it can go a bit too far. But let's talk about this later. So thanks for that. Quite interesting how the things with the coach's decision work. So we had the first highlight of the season. And Luis, then only a few weeks or days later was the second highlight.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in that extraordinary season, we also had an extraordinary schedule with all the event highlights. So after you won in Engelberg 2 times, obviously you were counted as the main favorite for the Four Hills tournament. How was it like going into that major event, being like in a pole position, at least for the people who are just watching?
It was interesting. It was a completely new experience as well for me. And I think it's hard to prepare for something like that, because then suddenly that was like the first time this winter that the Norwegian media was like proper on. It's been growing a lot throughout the season, but before it's then everyone pays attention, and it was different and also quite fun. And I think it's like a situation that if everything goes well, it's really nice, and if immediately if something goes wrong, it's you really feel it. And yeah, I really felt it when it went a bit shit. And because you can't go anywhere without the camera following you. It's like immediately when you go out of the cabin, you have a camera and follows you all the way. And in Garmisch, you have this free time in the shuttle car from the bottom of the hill up to the tower, and other than that, you are always filmed. And the same in all the other hills as well. But yeah, it's something different. You really feel that the World Cup competition is a World Cup competition, and the Four Hills is it's something different. It's like at least as a Norwegian, it's a big difference.
But it started quite okay for you with rank 4 in Oberstdorf and then second in Garmisch-Partenkirchen. I think you were halftime leader, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then Innsbruck came. I think, well, of course, in Germany, Innsbruck is always a topic because the Germans seem to lose the four wheels always in Innsbruck. So we would like to know how it was for you. First of all, we noticed that your in-run speed there was very untypically slow. Did you find out what happened there?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Is it a secret or can you tell us about it?
I think I know what the problem was and I think I would like to keep it for myself. It's not like a big secret, but I don't think it's something we have to talk about either.
Okay. But so was that then the main issue why it didn't work out for you there, or was it some other parts?
No, it was a combination of technique, speed, and conditions. Because in the qualification the day before, I did a really good jump and had good conditions, and the speed was low. And then I won the qualification, and then in the first round I did a okay jump. Speed was low and the conditions was unfavorable. And then you get punished. I think if I did a really good jump, maybe I jumped like 4 or 5 meters longer, but the jump wasn't bad. I think I might have won World Cup competitions with jumps like that this winter, or at least close to. So the jump wasn't too bad, but with the factor of having non-competitive speed, I would say, and conditions were quite a lot of headwind out of the takeoff, and then nothing in the bottom. It was you fall down quickly, and with a jump that's not like top level jump, it ended quite bad, to be honest.
Okay. So have you been after the Four Hills tournament? Lewis was telling it, you were the big favorite. In the end, it didn't work out as you wanted. Have you been disappointed after the Four Hills tournament?
Nah, not too much. I think if it ended after Innsbruck, then yes. But after Bischofshofen, I didn't perform. I maybe wanted it too much. It ended up jumping, at least in my eyes, the worst competition I had this winter in Bischofshofen. So then I don't have anything to be disappointed about. And also, at least for me, I don't see much difference in getting second or fourth in the four wheels. And that was also my point before the competition, and also the reason why I took the risk to go down on the gate to have a chance if the absolute top jumps came, that it would be at least achievable to put some pressure on Kamil. But then he also delivered the competition he did in Bischofshofen, and it was like, what is it to be disappointed about? It was amazing in the Austrian part of the forest. So it was okay, actually. It's good experience, and the result was quite okay, but of course, in the shape I was in, it's a bit of a disappointment. But I feel it was mostly a disappointment for the Norwegian media and not so much for me.
Yeah, we know this feeling very good. Louis said before, we in Germany wait since it's 20 years now with the victory of Four Hills tournament, quite a long time. But okay, then Four Hills were over, and I think how many days were it? One or two, and you just went over to Titis in Neustadt, and we were also discussing in our podcast, how will Halvor deal with it? Could it be that maybe his shape will not be good anymore, and maybe Eisenbichler will have a chance to win the big overall globe? Nothing of this, because from Titisee Neustadt on, you had your confidence back, and you started winning and winning and winning again. Was it an advantage for you that you didn't have too much time to think about what happened in Four Hills tournament, and that things were just going on and on and on, and so you could just do the things that you've done better than anyone in this year, showing good ski jumping?
Maybe. I remember I got to have a bit longer morning in Bischofshofen than the rest of the guys. I drove with Alex and slept in the car for the whole way almost, because it was a quite a big impact the whole Four Hills, and a lot of things to try and get out of the head until or in one day. But on the Friday in Neustadt before the prologue, my body wasn't working at all in technical point of view. It was absolutely, I didn't recognize myself at all, and I had to have a 1 hour, 1.5 hour of technique training, just trying to make the body do the things I wanted to. And it felt like really off. And of course, that's something that can happen after Bischofshofen, since Bischofshofen is so flat and so different. But I had to work really hard to get my jumping back. And then in the prologue, I did this amazing jump. And for me, it felt a bit like out of nowhere, because I knew how bad it was on the morning. And so I was really happy with that. And also the competition on Saturday, I was really happy with, because it was a really tough competition. And I know it's boring to talk about, but at least in the way I see and view ski jumping, you have to take what kind of conditions you have in how you value a competition and a result. And in that competition on the Saturday, I had really, really bad conditions, but I did do really good jumps. And I actually managed to be on the same length points as Kamil, but he absolutely crushed me on style. But I was really happy with that, and not so much the competition afterwards on the Sunday, even though I won that. The competition on Saturday was the best that weekend.
Mm-hmm. And then it continued as a really, really amazing and incredible season. And there was another highlight coming up. And for you, it turned out as a really special trip to Oberstdorf. We talk about this after a short break.
Yeah.
So after this short break, we are back in the second round of our interview with Halvor Egner Granerud, who is still online, thankfully. And now we are coming to the final highlights of this winter season, the World Championships in Oberstdorf. After your fourth rank on the normal hill, you finally received your first World Championship medal with the silver in the mixed team. What did this success mean for you?
I don't know. No, it was it was good. It felt good, especially like we, especially in the mixed competition. I thought it was really cool because we beat all the teams we really wanted to beat, and the teams we thought we needed to beat to win the gold. But then suddenly, especially the German girls, but also Eisenbichler was stepped up massively and performed an amazing performance, and we ended up second, and it was the right result that day. And immediately we were a bit disappointed because you want the gold and it was not too many points. I think it was like 4 or 5 points. So after 8 jumps, that's not much. But at the same time, we could all look ourselves in the mirror and say that, yeah, we performed quite good, and we performed to the level of what you can expect. And if you're doing what you can and then get beaten, you can't be too disappointed. But immediately after a competition, it was a bit hard to take. But I think throughout the mixed zone, at least for myself, I started realizing that we did what we wanted to do, and actually, especially the German girls who had been struggling a bit in the hill, was just did amazing jumps, and then we, at least my focus went from disappointment to applause, and good.
Understandable. You guys also won the mixed team event the week before in Romania. But those mixed team competitions are very rare on the calendar. I mean, outside of the World Championships, we hadn't had them for like, I don't know, 8 seasons or so. How are these mixed team competitions seen in amongst you ski jumpers? Do you generally like them and would like to have more of them, or is it still a bit unused?
In my opinion, they are really, really fun. I really like them. I've done 3 now, I think, one in the Junior World Championship and then the one in Drasno, one in Oberstdorf. And it's really cool because first you have more teams competing and more teams being actually competitive. And also I think the power shifts a bit more than in the normal team competitions, where you have of course 6 teams that are good enough for a podium, but maybe 3 teams good enough for 3-4 teams good enough for winning. And then in the mixed team, you have like teams like Russia have a quite good team and could on their day be good enough for a podium. And you have like different teams having the, I think, at least the favorites and the best jumpers, and also easier for smaller teams like Canada or France to have a team. And yeah, for me, they are great fun and also a bit different, and also a lot more versatility in where who leads, and you have bigger shifts, and yeah, it's a fun competition for me. And I've talked a bit to the others in the Norwegian team. We as a team really like them, and that's also my feeling from the competitors from other countries, that they also enjoy the competition and the different challenge it is, and also the more open competition. So I think, at least in my experience, the most of the athletes really like them.
We actually do also, because we spoke about it a lot in our podcast episodes. But one thing which is also very in our mind is that FIS announced like 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, that they generally want to have more events for men and women together. But this season we only had it in Rašnov and then in Oberstdorf. Would you also like to jump and compete more alongside the women throughout the winter and also the summer, obviously?
Yes, I think it's you have some challenges with it, with the light and TV times and everything, or the less flexibility. But I think it's a good way to for us Norwegians to feed off the interest Maren brings, and for maybe a lot of the women's team to feed off the interest that the boys give and get. And you also, it's so much more attractive for the journalists and the actual people building our sport to go to a competition where you get to write stories about two competitions in one day instead of only one. So I think there's a lot. And also you have the ability to reduce cost a bit, I think, as well, because you don't have to prepare the hill twice if it's getting used by both men and women. So it's a lot of positives and some challenges, but I think it's a good way to aim for more competitions like this and more shared weekends. But at least the big places where you have enough hotels, that's also a challenge, and especially this year when you have to have a lot less, or you can't have the same amount of people in all hotels and everything. It was a big bit of a challenge in that way, but I think in my eyes, it's a great opportunity to build this both sports.
And with Raw Air in Norway, you actually did set a good example for how it actually could work. What I also asked myself, how much time or possibility do you actually have as a ski jumper following what the women are doing? How close are you actually to them?
We in Norway are quite close, and yeah, we do train quite a bit together as well. And it depends on when the competition is for us, but we at least I tried to watch the competitions on my phone. That probably depends a bit on who you are, but I remember watching the victory of Eirin Kvandal in I think it was when we were in Lahti, and it was so fun to see that, and then go up and try to better it, of course. It was I watched most of the competitions, I think, as long as it was possible, and we didn't train or compete at the same time.
Yeah. And we also spoke it on in our break that you also make your own podcast together with your teammate Daniel-André Tande. And since we and probably most of our listeners don't really speak Norwegian, we're curious because we heard that you were also talking about women's ski jumping in one episode. So can you maybe summarize what your key points you were focusing on there?
Yeah, it was our key points was to kind of get or we tried to have a small brainstorm about how can women's ski jumping grow and how to grow it. Obviously, we are good at ski jumping, but we don't know what buttons to push for something to happen or how the process actually is and how the facts are. We are just putting out ideas. But one thing we looked at and discussed a bit was maybe the prize money, because if you the more ski jumpers being able to be full-time ski jumpers, the level will rise naturally, and the more athletes being able to work less to be able to get the ends to meet, you will have a level, the level will go up, because in sports you have to, it's really hard to combine making money if you're not making money doing what you do. So that was one point. It's quite low. That's also a plus for the mixed competition because it's I talked to Silje shortly after the victory and she was like, oh, I never earned this much in a competition. And because it was the same level, it was on our level in the team competition prize money. So it's also good for the best girls. Then we also talked about the mixed or the shared venue, and that maybe being a possibility to, grow off each other, and for the women to, it will, yeah. We talked about it previous, the fact that you can have journalists going there too. Yeah, it's a lot easier and more attractive for media to cover, and also possibly sponsorships, like you have this hot air balloons, for example, around some of the men's competitions. Maybe they will pay a little bit extra for the women competition exposure as well. But these are all only ideas. I don't know how it would work, but I think if the men's competitions invest in the women's competition, I think the potential there is, it's a lot of unfulfilled potential. And I think, for example, the overall finish this season in the women's competition, it was amazingly tight and exciting, and that's what sells. I think that you have to have either extreme performances or exciting competitions, and I think you get both in the women's. Of course, you have to be realistic and see that the top athletes, like Kramer this winter, is jumping on such a high level that you can't expect everyone else to make such a performance leap in such a short time. But they are growing quite quickly, and I think, and you can also see the gates the gates and the speed they are going with, it's going quite quickly down. And I remember the first camps I was on with 18, all the girls were far up in the, going from 10, 15 gates higher, and then now it's 5 maybe, and same gate as Marne a lot this summer, and yeah, they are making quite quick progress, and I hope that I hope we manage to grow the media attention as well, so you also get the fans' attention and the mainstream attention, and then I think ski jumping as a whole will be a lot healthier, and yeah, it will be a benefit for everyone. But let's see. I think it's a lot of good things happening. I think, but some of the processes are a bit slow.
Yeah, we discussed about this the whole year, and we will continue as long as we see that things make some steps forward. And it's really important also that the male ski jumpers, and I mean, we're talking about the overall globe winner, that you support the women's ski jumping. And those are the small steps that we have to take. And hopefully one day we'll see it on the same level as, for example, I always use this example as we saw it in or see it in biathlon, because some 20 or 30 years ago in Germany, they said, "Huh, women doing biathlon? No, it's only a sports for men." And now today, women's biathlon is even more popular than the men's biathlon is. And I guess the same is it in Norway. And so we hope that the things go into the right direction. And we also saw at the World Championships in Oberstdorf, if I asked my friends or my colleagues or my family, they said, "Oh, it was almost the first time we watched women's ski jumping. And it was cool. We had fun. Yeah. It was great competition." And that's the point, however, when you show the people how which level this sport already is, they get in contact and they say, "Hey, it's the same fun I have watching women's ski jumping when I watch the men's ski jumping."
Yeah, and also the competitions in the World Championship was amazing. It was so much happening, and the top 5 girls was jumping on such a high level that everyone could get a medal, and it was really good and really cool to see. And I think also one thing I forgot to mention is that you have some different nations being good for the girls and the men. And I thought about it when we had our winning press conference of the World Cup overall. We had it together with the girls. Cool. It was 6 athletes and 6 different nations. And that's also really cool. And that's a sign that I think the sport and the competitiveness in the sport is going in a healthy and good way, because at least in Norway, we have a lot of attention to the ones winning, and getting good results is really important for the attention you get. So if we have 6 different nations doing or having athletes on a level high enough to be on the podium in the World Cup overall, it's good for the sport. And then again, back to maybe having more competitions on the same place.
Let's hope for that. Halvor, we go back to Oberstdorf, and the mixed event, unfortunately, was the last competition you could participate in Oberstdorf, because you were infected with the coronavirus. Where and when did you get the information that you're COVID positive, and what happened in that moment? And I think things changed rapidly after the diagnosis said that it's positive.
Yeah, I was feeling like a bit, I was a bit of a small cold, I think, quite runny nose. And other than that, it was, I wasn't too nervous, to be honest, for the test. But then we had a speed test on the Tuesday, and then you get the result 45 minutes after, 30 minutes, and it was positive. And after that, I just had to stay in my room, and then we took a PCR test in the afternoon, and then the results were in the morning. And then obviously when that as well was positive, we broke the news, and that was quite hard. Obviously, when we only had the result of the quick test, they do on a rare occasion have false positives, so it was a bit of a hope. When I had that result and also the feeling in the body, it was like, maybe I'm actually sick. And then the final result came, and then I think everything in the body just gave up a bit. Like, there's no need to make the brain think that the body is better than it is. And then I was in bed for 3 days and almost didn't. I went to the toilet and I went to the door to pick up some food, and other than that, I didn't do anything. I watched the competitions, and on the individual competition, I was in such a bad shape that it was absolutely no problem watching it. I didn't get sad or angry or anything. It was, it was quite tough. I didn't get super sick, but I got quite sick. And then I also, I was sick enough to watch ski jumping on TV without getting annoyed, so it was quite bad.
Mm-hmm. But today everything's fine again. Huh? You didn't have problems after, because there are some people that really have to deal with COVID for a really long time.
Yeah, I think it's a bit early to say, but I. Obviously, when it happened, and also the day after I won the World Cup overall, so I knew that kind of the main goal of the season was done. The competitions in Planica would be a great bonus, but it wasn't something I had to do. So I tried to be cautious in the training up to Planica and start quite slowly and do things in a responsible way to minimize the chances of struggling with this for a long time. So I've been quite cautious. I am still quite cautious in how I train. But it looks good. I've done some tests, and that looked quite okay. It doesn't look like there's much of a difference. So I hope it won't be something I struggle with for a long time. But it's too early to say something definite, but at least it looks like I've managed to come out of it in a positive and good way.
Okay, fingers crossed that there will be no consequences. Then, Alvo, we talked about it before. You said you've during winter you've been longer in Oberstdorf than in Norway, because you had to stay for a very long time. What did you do all the time you had to stay? Because I think there were difficulties with coming back to Norway, and you had to stay in Oberstdorf instead. Where have you been? I think we know it, but we want to hear it from you as well. Yeah. What did you do all the time there?
Well, I spent a lot of time on my PC, just looking at watching YouTube and watching sports. And the first almost week, it was a world championship in Nordic skiing, so it was a lot of things to watch. And then after that, it was like football and YouTube and some series, and also quite a lot of meetings when the shape was getting better. For me, I felt like the 10 days I stayed there for 15 days, I think, after I tested positive on a Tuesday, and then I went home on Wednesday, so it was 15 days. And that was quite, it was okay, actually. I know it sounds strange, but after the first week, I moved into an apartment of Andy Bauer. And besides the fact that he was quite happy with the mixed competition, and I was quite annoyed with the mixed competition, it was really good. There I had everything I would have at home, more or less. And I got to make my own food. I got to live a normal life for the first time in ages, and just be my own boss for some time with nothing to do and nothing I needed to do. And it was quite good. And to be honest, I think that it was better to be in isolation there with all the help I got, and also with the ability to go outside and actually walk outside in the garden there. It was a lot better than what it would have been if I got a chance to go to my apartment in Trondheim, where I have a balcony. But it would have been a lot harder to stay for the amount of time I had to stay in an apartment with only a balcony, compared to the apartment with everything you need, and also a garden to walk in, and like simple things to train as well. So it turned out, I think, to be quite good, and I actually enjoyed my stay and had a good time, and got the chance to breathe for the first time really in the winter, so it was okay. But also I don't have a problem with being on my own. I'm quite good at entertaining myself, so I had a good time, at least.
Well, that's obviously great to hear, and also a sign for people who think that ski jumping family is just a hashtag on Twitter and Instagram. So,
yeah, I think we have a few examples that it's not. That's also
perfect. Yeah,
my previous experience as well. If you miss any equipment or anything, you get help.
Yeah, we also had that this the season for the Norwegian girls in Hinzenbach, yeah.
Yeah, and also the Gunty Cup team as well.
Ah, yeah, yeah, in Willingen, no? Was that?
Yeah. At least in Willingen, I don't know if it was more than that, but that's the struggle when you have to fly everywhere. It's you put like your weekend in outside of your own hands, and then it's a bit scary.
Yeah, but it's also not a good performance of airlines who even mess up with this, even such a period when there's not much flying going on.
Also, maybe not so many people on the airport, and yeah,
could be. So you've also mentioned Planica as the final stage of the season already. I can imagine it was a bit difficult to start jumping again and then going to one of the biggest hills in the world. Did it feel somehow strange in the beginning, or did you already feel at home when you made your first jumps there on Wednesday, I think it was?
Yeah, on the first jump, it was okay, I think, or it felt like it was... was normal Planica ski flying. You are quite scared on the first jump, and you get better when you're you get more jumps. But looking back and also realizing during the weekend that I had too few jumps, because it was I made some easy mistakes, because I didn't have like the touch in the ski jumping. It was so, but it was okay. And also when I was starting to get get rid of the illness, I quite quickly were in a mental state to go to Planica, because I think you have to be mentally prepared for it as well. And I felt like I was, and it was an okay weekend, but obviously I both wanted better results and better or more long flights, and also we had that crash that also made the weekend a lot more difficult.
Yeah, that's obviously probably the moment which is being remembered the most from that weekend. Do you remember? Did you saw it live, or was it told to you? How did you hear about it?
No, I only heard it, because I saw Sato, I think, in the warm up cabin on the top, and from him to me, it was 10 jumpers, I think, and that's quite good in Planica, because he uses a few jumpers to the top, and then it's okay to find a place to get ready and everything. So I was on my way from the cabin to the top when he jumped, and I heard it, like you have this... you have the army guys with the curtains for the tracks, and you also have all the other athletes, and you heard that this isn't a scary jump, this is a crash, this is a proper crash. And then I was like, oh, hope it's okay. And then who could it be, and who's jumping off the F? And then it must be Danny jumping. Because and then that was quite tough, but at the same time I know his jumping and his jumping style, and I know that he can be quite he does sometimes have those scary jumps, and usually it goes quite good. I think he tried to flip in both trial rounds in Garmisch as well, so I thought it would be okay. And then you come up to the top and you see like There's absolutely no sign of anyone going out of the hill. Everyone is going into the hill. And it takes so long. And the helicopter started going. And the helicopter started before we started jumping again. So I think at least that was really tough to be on the top there and getting ready and listening to the helicopter starting and to take one of the best friends away. And you don't know how it is and how the condition is and what actually happened. So that was tough, and jumped, and the jump was quite good. And then you just ask everyone what's going on, and no one knows. That was the hardest, when you went from not knowing anything and then asking everyone you who could know something, and they also don't know how it is. And yeah, that was really, really tough and really hard, because ski jumping is important, but it's not that important. And it was a tough situation to be in. And also in the before the second jump or the first round, I went for a quick walk to kind of hopefully get the head in a better place and get the body ready again. And unfortunately, I walked past the helicopter at the same time as they got Daniel in. So I actually saw him in that state, and that was not good either. Not making things easier, and then I went up, and it felt like I had the ability to be focused on what I needed to do for like 25 seconds, and it ended up like, I think 36, 37 seconds on yellow and then green, and the head was gone, and just silly in-run position and a bad jump. First competition without the final round.
It still feels a bit unreal listening to this story. So was it ever an option for you to not jump, actually, or did you just think, well, it's my job, I have to do it?
I know Danny, and I don't think I think he would have been really disappointed if we didn't jump. So for his sake, it was not an option to not jump, because I think I would have gotten quite a lot of bad words if we abandoned the competition because he did something stupid. So but you felt it, but at the same time, it's, of course, you get reminded that there are big consequences to this sport, but at the same time, these are consequences that we know and we accept every time we let go of the bar. We know the consequences, and I think for everyone in that field, of course, it makes maybe things a bit more scary, and you get more, or you get reminded a bit better. But at the same time, to jump in Planetza, you need a lot of confidence in yourself, and I think that confidence was big enough for everyone to jump.
Yeah, we are basically all glad that it actually turned out quite okay, and especially also the first words we got to hear over social media from Danny were quite quite relieving, we can actually say so.
Yeah, I think it's gone. I've talked a little bit with him, and he seems like he's himself. So that's good.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, we were all glad that it ended like this. And finally, the season was over, and you winning the yellow jersey, the big crystal globe. Halvor, so now we are in the summer break, and I think your thoughts are already going to next winter. It's going to be a special winter again. We have the Olympic Games going on in China. How's the plan so far? How are things now going? Did you already start restart training, or how is the plan for the next weeks and months?
I've started a bit. I've started the process of trying to get in shape again, and I will listen to the body a lot in concern of how everything is after COVID and everything. But I've started, but at this point in the season, it's mostly when I want to and do things I want to do training wise. It's not like I've put this obligation, you have to train every day, on myself yet. But it's getting there, and I think it's important to have a big enough break after the season before we start a new one to actually be finished with the last season you had before you start a new one. I'm in that transfer phase from finishing last season to starting a new one, and trying to do some things I haven't done in a while, and also trying to do more outside of ski jumping things, like for example making this podcast and meetings with potential sponsors and things like that. So I've tried to, and also now I'm visiting my family in Asker, just outside Oslo. I live in Trondheim, so I haven't seen them in half a year almost. So I tried to do all the things I haven't had the chance to do, and eat all the things I can't eat during the season to be done with that and have it like a lot in a short amount of time, and then you get ready to start a new season, I think.
Yes. So is it, do you already have goals for next season, or is it too early because you are in the transferring process now and the last season, it's only 3 weeks that it ended?
I have some goals. I want to try and get better and have a better season. And I think to have a better season, I have to do better in the highlights. And I also have to put in at least the same amount of work. So it will be really hard, and I have to be, every time I train, I have to be aiming for the absolute best, and that's the aim and the goal, and then we'll see. It's still ski jumping, so small things can have big effects. So I will try and have control of as much of the small things as possible, and then hopefully I can be better next year.
We wish you all the best for this. But Halvor, if you are better next season than you've been this season, it's going to be tough for all the other jumpers to win anything in this sport.
But you have to aim high, and it would be quite strange to have my aim for next season to be a little bit worse than this year. But
that's true. I think no sportsman on the planet will say this. Halvor, when we have guests in our podcast, in the end, we always have our short questions on ski jumping. It's five of them, and Luis will ask you the short questions, and we are looking forward to your answers.
Yes, usually we call it Einmal Eins in German, but it's horrible translating into English. So we call it, let's say, Halvor's Quick Five. I don't know. And the first one of them, what is your favorite hill?
It was the old ski flying hill in Vikersund, but now it's a bit ruined with the new profile, and you go so much higher and you don't get that same takeoff feeling. So now I think it's either Engelberg or Lahti. I think maybe Lahti, actually, because that I'm yet to have a bad competition in Lahti. So
okay. And what is the hill you probably dislike the most, or like the least?
It has been Planica changed a bit during the World Championship when I suddenly managed to jump good there. Other than that, I don't know, actually. In World Cup sense, I think maybe Planica, because I think it's the hill I have the worst results in. But in a World Championship sense, it's the best hill. So I don't know. It's also so cool to jump there. So it's only a competitiveness. So I think it's Innsbruck.
sounds legit, yeah. Okay, then third question would be, who has the most beautiful ski jumping style? Can be a current athlete or even a former athlete?
I like Kraft. Mm-hmm. I like Kamil's Telemarks. So I think maybe a hybrid of those two, or a hybrid with Ryuyo's takeoff, Kraft's flying, and Kamil's landing.
Sounds pretty much unbeatable, yeah.
Yeah.
But interestingly, we had Martin Koch like the week before the World Championships, and he actually said Espen Bredesen.
Yeah, but he's too old for me, you know.
True, true, yeah.
And to be honest, this is highly controversial to say, of course, but I think it looks better now with the equipment we have and the control we have over our skis. Yeah. Of course, it maybe doesn't look as extreme as you had when they had like 20 centimeters to go to take the heel up, and skis were all the way behind the head all the time and that. But I think it looks better now.
Absolutely, yeah. Fourth question. What was your best, or let's say favorite, career moment so far?
I think the team competition in Planica in the World Championship. I think that will be hard to beat with everything everything happening and the stage and yeah, everything.
Would have been a big surprise if you said something else.
I could have said the prize giving ceremony after the competition on Sunday in Planitza. So
yeah, awesome. Okay. Yeah. Well, obviously, it would have been better with a Planitza typical audience, but
yeah.
Maybe that's safe for another day. And final question, what was your funniest or probably even strangest moment you've had in your career? Maybe even something the public haven't seen.
I remember when we were training before the World Championship in Oslo in 2011. I was a trial jumper. One of the guys lost their ski from the top, so it went down, crashed into the fence. And then it flew like 5-10 meters up in the air and over the commentary boxes on the end of the hill. That was quite extreme. There's so much, you know. But probably most of the things we did, like in the age between 13 to 18, when a bunch of kids traveling around Norway, jumping and having fun and yeah, not taking life too serious. It was a great time in my career, I think. And you have seen some of the results with that famous jump with not too much clothing on. And also, I think, have you seen the five jumpers in Holmenkollen?
Yeah, it's still the most clicked video on FIS YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's also quite cool.
Yeah.
Also, we had like this special bib song of Edvard Munch, and I don't know how, but they managed to. Walter said, like, yeah, sure. You can do this after a competition. So it was like 5 minutes after with full TV production and everything. I think that's maybe looking back, it's quite cool that we were allowed to do it and that we did it. And yeah, I think that's one of the coolest, like unknown. I think it's, how many is it? 200,000 views on YouTube. So it's not that unknown, but maybe it's a bit unknown that I also were in it.
Those were Halvor's quick five. Thanks a lot. Really interesting. As the whole podcast was, Halvor, we are really, really glad that we had the chance to talk to you for so long, to get so much details about you, about your sports and all the interesting things we were talking about in the last few minutes. Halvor, thanks again. It was really nice that you've been part in our show. We wish you all the best now for the break and for the preparation for the next season and then for the Olympic season 21-22. And hopefully we will also meet on the hills, because for us journalists, it was also difficult to attend the events. But next year, hopefully, we will meet in person. Thanks a lot, Halvor.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Das Interview und die Zeit mit Halvor Egger-Granerud. Sie verging, Achtung Wortspiel, wie im Flug. Und ich denke mal, das ging nicht nur Tobi und mir so, während wir das Interview gemacht haben, sondern hoffentlich auch euch. Aber jetzt natürlich die große Frage, Tobi. Wir haben es jetzt tatsächlich wahrscheinlich doch geschafft. Uns erwartet jetzt eine kleine Pause. Was machen wir denn danach dann eigentlich, wird die große Frage sein. Denn wir haben auch schon einige Nachrichten über Instagram beispielsweise bekommen. Wie geht's jetzt mit der Flugshow weiter?
Jetzt schauen wir erstmal, wie lange die Pause tatsächlich ausfällt. Also ihr habt gemerkt, es kann schnell gehen. Aber wir haben schon einige Ideen gesammelt. Also was heißt wir? Gernot und ich waren ein bisschen faul und Luis hat schon ein cooles Brainstorming für uns festgehalten. Aber ja, wir schauen, dass wir uns jetzt erstmal eine kurze Zeit rausnehmen. Aber ihr habt es gemerkt, es kann schnell gehen. Und ja, dann haben wir einige Ideen schon so angedacht, die wir auch umsetzen werden. Werden sicherlich auch wieder den einen oder anderen Gesprächspartner, Gesprächspartnerin hier in der Sendung haben. Das ist unser Ziel, unser Anspruch. Und ihr müsst auch, wenn es jetzt wärmer wird, nicht auf unsere liebste Wintersportart verzichten. Wir halten euch da auf dem Laufenden. Und wenn ihr nichts verpassen wollt, dann folgt uns auf unseren Social-Media-Kanälen. Ihr findet uns bei Facebook, bei Twitter und bei Instagram. Wenn es neue Folgen gibt, werden wir die da entsprechend ankündigen. Und ja, ihr habt uns eh abonniert in eurem Podcatcher. Und auch da werdet ihr informiert, wenn es neue Folgen gibt. Luis, dann würde ich sagen, ich wünsche dir jetzt mal eine schöne Pause. Mal schauen, wie lange sie geht. Und dann, ja, bleibt mir nur noch zu sagen, dass ich natürlich Gernot Clement grüße, der heute nicht teilnehmen konnte, aber natürlich gedanklich immer in unserem Herzen mit dabei ist. Und in seinem Sinne gibt's jetzt seinen Slogan, unseren Slogan. Macht's gut, genießt auch ihr ein bisschen Skispringenpause und fliegt, soweit's geht,